What I'd like to suggest we do is review the Mishnah, at least the Eisavenik. We don't have to read it word for word. This is on Kuf Chaf Hei Amud Aleph, going on to Kuf Chaf Hei Amud Beis. And there's a Reisha in the Mishnah, and there's a Seifa in the Mishnah. In the Reisha, we're talking about what's called an Evin Bekeruya. And in the Sefer of the Mishnah, we're talking about Pekak Chalon. We're not interested in that Sefer, Pekak Chalon. That's not for us now. We're going to focus on the case of Evin Shebekeruya. Keruya, we said, was a bucket. And on Erev Shabbos, he places a stone inside the bucket. And this allows him to draw water from the well, because as a result of the weight of the stone in the bucket goes down and he's able to pull up some water. Now the Mishnah wants to know whether or not you're allowed to use this bucket that has a stone in it, and perhaps there's a problem now because the stone is muktzah. And the Mishnah establishes that it all depends. What happens with the stone? If it's affixed, it's tied down to the bucket, then everything's okay. The Evin itself is not considered muktzah in this case, because it's tied down to the bucket and it becomes part of the kli itself. If not, if the Evin is not tied down, it's only there on a very loose, temporary connection, then what happens is that the Evin remains muktzah and the bucket itself becomes a basis l'davar asur, and that too is asur b'tiltul. That's what we have in the Mishnah. So what I'd like to do now is review the Gemara inside, word by word. The Gemara begins with another Mishnah. Our Mishnah is on Kuf Chaf Hei Amud Beis. There's another Mishnah a little bit further on in the Masechta, and that's on Kuf Mem Beis Amud Beis. That Mishnah is not discussing the case of Keruya, of a bucket that's used to draw water, but rather a case of a barrel, a wine barrel. And there's an Evin, there's a stone that has been placed on top of the wine barrel. Now, if the wine barrel becomes a basis for the Evin itself is muktzah, then we have a problem moving the chavis. And here the Mishnah gives us two scenarios, two sections. The first case is where the barrel is alone, so to speak. It's a lone barrel, and there are no other barrels around it. And therefore, the Mishnah offers him the option, if he wants to get the barrel from one place to the other, and he can't do so right now because he has a stone on top of the barrel, so what he does is mate al tzida, he's allowed to tip the chavis onto its side, vihino felis, and the stone falls. There are no other barrels around it in this case, and therefore he's not afraid that the stone in its flight downwards would damage any other barrels. But then the Mishnah says, what should he do if he needs access to the wine in the barrel? He's got a stone on top of the barrel, and there are many other neighboring barrels, and if he tips over this barrel to get the Evin to fall, it's going to fall and break other barrels. So in such a case, the Mishnah allows him to lift up the chavis while the stone is on top of it, bring it to another place, and there he's going to do what he would have done originally in the first place, and that is matal tzida, and he lets by tipping the barrel over, he's going to let the stone fall. Okay. Now, what's going to happen is the following. The Gemara is going to quote now a machlokes about how to interpret that Mishnah on Kuf Mem Beis Amud Beis, and then the Gemara is going to come back to our Mishnah and analyze the machlokes regarding Kuf Mem Beis from the perspective of our Mishnah of Evin Shebekeruya here on Kuf Chaf Hei. So right now we're focused on the Mishnah Vayta, the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Beis of Even Shemunachas Al Pi HaChavetz. And the Gemara records the following. Everything in this sugya depends upon Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, as you know, was a first generation Amora. In the Yerushalmi, he's called a Tana. And he had two major Talmidim. He had many Talmidim, but the two that are most important for us today are Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi. And each of these two Amoraim, Talmidim of the Rebbe, of Rabbi Yochanan, had a different transmission, a different version of exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said with regard to the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Beis, the Mishnah of Even Al Pi HaChavetz. Now, what's less significant, but let's note it, is that Rav Ami's tradition was quoted by Rabbah, and Rav Asi's tradition was quoted by Rav Yosef. So let's go through this transmission of Rav Ami and then Rav Asi. Omar Rabbah. Omar Rav Asi, Omar Rav Yochanan. According to what I heard from Rabbi Ami in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Lo Shanu, when did the Mishnah allow you to pick up the Chavis? Remember we said that there was a case, a scenario in the Mishnah where there are many neighboring barrels, so he doesn't have the option of tipping this barrel over to its side. Instead, he's allowed to pick up the barrel, lift it together with the stone on top of it. And that means that we don't consider the barrel to be a basis l'davar asur, and we're allowed to literally lift up the barrel if need be, in order to place it in a different area where he can then tip it over and let the stone fall down. Says Rabbi Ami in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Ella Bishocheach. That why is it that the Mishnah establishes that the Chavis is not a basis l'davar asur? And the reason is because he did not have kavana, he did not deliberately intend to place the stone on top of the barrel. The case was that on Erev Shabbos, shachach, he forgot the stone on the barrel. Again, what that means, we're going to have to see, but for now, the main point is that he did not deliberately place the stone on top of the barrel. Had he done so, then the stone, insofar as it's muktzah, would make the barrel into a basis l'davar asur, and therefore he would not be allowed to lift up the chavis. No way, no how. Even when he's pressured here, because he has other chavios around it. Aval b'meniach, and that's the next case where he deliberately placed the stone on top of the barrel, and even though, again, keep in mind, why did he place the stone on top of the barrel? Apparently he's using it as a lid cover. Nevertheless, nasa basis l'davar asur. The chavis itself becomes a basis. There's no way that you're allowed to move it. And again, Rabbi Osai, what we're seeing here, in this context of Rabbi Ami, is that even though he placed the stone down deliberately to serve as a kisui, as a covering over his barrel, nevertheless, it still retains its status as muktzah. That's going to be a problem from our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says, if you recall, in the case of Evan Shebekeria, that the stone is not considered muktzah, but rather it's part of the keria, it's part of the bucket. Why? Because he needs the Evan to function in the context of the bucket. As we said before, he's got to weigh down the bucket. Here also, he needs the stone on top of the Chavis to cover the Chavis, so the wine will not be exposed to the air. And yet, despite that all, Rabbi Ami says that the Chavis, insofar as he placed the stone onto the Chavis deliberately, becomes a basis l'davros. So we're going to see in just 2 minutes the connection between the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Beis and our Mishnah. And our Mishnah seems to be a contradiction to the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Beis, at least according to Rabbi Ami. Now we have another tradition, again in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. And this is a different student of Rabbi Yochanan, namely Rav Asi. who's going to transmit that version of Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rav Asi? That's going to be Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef apparently was a student of Rav Asi, whereas Rabba previously was a student of Rabbi Ami. And Rav Yosef, insofar as he was sitting at the feet of his Rebbe Rav Asi, he heard a whole different tradition in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Lo Shanu. When did the Mishnah say that there's a problem because the Chavis now is housing the Evan that's on top of it, and therefore the Mishnah, if you recall, said that you're not allowed to just lift up the chavis. What you have to do is tip over the chavis and allow the stone to fall down. Lo shanu ela b'shocheach. That only applies because he forgot the stone on Erev Shabbos and he left it there without any deliberate purpose. He didn't have a place to put down his stone. He put it on top of this barrel. The barrel now becomes a bosses, and the only way you're able to get access to the wine in the barrel is by tipping the barrel over to get rid of the oven that's on Aval B'meiniach. But if he deliberately placed the stone down on top of the barrel, Nasa Kisui Lechavis. This tradition of Rav Asi in the name of Rav Yochanan is that since he deliberately placed the stone down on top of the chavis to serve as a lid, therefore the stone itself becomes now a part of the kli, and if it's part of the kli, it's not mukta, and you don't even have to bother shaking it around and tipping it over, just simply move the chavis. So let's just summarize. Because Yehuda, you came a little late, I want you to hear the summary. According to the first tradition, that of Rav Ami in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, we're going to have another tradition in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that of Rav Asi. In the case where he deliberately places a stone down on a chavis, and he's doing so for the purpose of the stone serving as a kavalid, the stone remains mukta, and therefore the chavis becomes a basis l'davar asur. And therefore, any heter that the Mishnah permits you to move the chavis in any shape or form, that's only in the case of shocheach. That since he forgot and he left this stone, this evan on top of the chavis, he did not place it there deliberately. Therefore, the chavis does not become a basis l'davar asur. There was no deliberate relationship between the chavis that's hosting the evan itself. And therefore, the Mishnah is going to allow you, in a case where there are many barrels, neighboring barrels, to pick up this barrel and move it. That's because it was a case of shocheach. But if it was meniach, then the chavis becomes a basis for the evan, and therefore you're not allowed to move the chavis. And the obvious question that we have to raise on Rabbi Ami is, well, since he deliberately put the evan on top of the chavis, he wants the evan to serve as what? As a cover. That should make it a kli. But apparently, for some odd reason, and this is again a little bit foreign to us in terms of everything that we've been studying, Rabbi Ami, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, is not willing to say that simply because you decided that this stone should function as a kisui, as a covering for your chavis, that doesn't make it into a kli. We need something more profound in order to make it into a kli. And then we're going to see right now that our mission of Evan Shebekeria contradicts Rabbi Ami. Then we have Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, on the contrary, in a case of Meniach, if he deliberately placed the stone on top of the barrel in order that it should function as a kavalid, that makes it into what? Into a kli, and therefore it's mutter. And this whole discussion in the Mishnah about how you have to move it on the side, and so forth and so on, that's irrelevant. That's only relevant in the case of Shocheach, where he forgot, and for whatever reason, he placed the evan on top of the chavis. He had no intention of designating this evan as a kisui, as a covering over his chavis, and therefore it doesn't become a kli. And now the chavis becomes a basis l'davar asur. There's a double machlokus here, if you noticed. One machlokus is in the case of meniach, where he's deliberate. According to Rabbi Ami, it's not a kli, even though he put it there deliberately to serve as a, according to Ravasi, it is a kli. Then there's a second machlokas. What happens in the case of Shachach? According to the first version, that's Rav Ami's version, in the case of Shachach, where he didn't have kavana to put it down on top of the chavis does not become mukta. It does not become a basis. Why? Because it was Shachach. And according to Rav Asi's interpretation, no. Even though it was only Shachach, nevertheless, the chavis becomes a basis. So for the time being, Rabbi Osei, we're going to focus on the first machlokas, the first dimension of this machlokas. When I deliberately place a stone on top of a barrel to serve as a cover, does it become a kli or does it retain its status as mukta? That's what we're going to focus our attention on right now. Yeah.
Just to clarify, that decision is being made Erev Shabbos.
Yes, everything's going on in Erev Shabbos. Okay. Amar Rabba, after Rabba submits his transmission based on Rabbi Ami of Rabbi Yochanan's statement, then out of intellectual honesty, Mosvinon Ashmatin, I have a question on this tradition, on this version, based on our sugya, meaning our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, quote, Ha'evin Shebekeruya, this stone that's used to weigh down the bucket, which is going to allow you, facilitate that you draw water from the well, in Memalimba Vienna Nofeles, if you can use this bucket and the stone does not fly away. In other words, even after you lift up the bucket from the bottom of the well filled with water, you still have the stone on the bottom of the bucket, is then Mimalinba, we're allowed to use the bucket on Shabbos. It means that since he designated the stone to function as a weight for this bucket, to make sure the bucket goes down into the water, therefore the stone loses its status as mukts and it becomes part of the kli, part of the bucket. That contradicts my assumption, because my assumption, my tradition in Rabbi Yochanan was meaniyat, that if he deliberately placed the stone on top of the barrel, the barrel now becomes a basis. It means that the stone is not a kli, but rather it's mukta. So here you see in that Mishnah that the stone that weighs down the bucket is considered a kli, and it's not mukta. Velohi, says Rava, that's not a question. Hasam in the Mishnah came under Hadka. The Mishnah, when it says Einan Ofeles, that the Evan does not get detached, it doesn't just float up to the surface and get lost, so to speak. That's because of Hadka. Hadka means he tied down the stone to the bucket. Is Shavya Dofen, he transforms this stone into the wall of the bucket. It's absolutely attached to the bucket. It therefore has a profound change has been made, which you can see with the naked eye, because you tie down the stone to the bucket. Tying down a stone to the bucket makes it part of the bucket. It has a shame kli, and therefore it's not mukta, so you're allowed to use the bucket. But in the case of Rabbi Ami's interpretation of the Mishnah based on Rabbi Yochanan, of Evan al-Pi HaChavis, there the only thing he did in the case of Meniach was that he placed the Evan on top of the Chavis. He didn't tie down the Evan to the Chavis, and therefore the Evan, the stone, still retains its independent identity. It's not a kli, and it's mukta. And that's why the Mishnah says that you have a serious problem here in the case of Meniach, because now the Chavis becomes a basis l'mukta. And why is the Evan mukta? Because there was no hadka. He did not tie down the Evan to the bucket. The Gemara is going to go ahead and analyze this principle in just a minute. But first, we're going to jump over to the second tradition of Rabbi Yochanan. That's the Rabbi Yosef in the name of Rav Asi. Om Rav Yosef, umosvin en ashmaitin. Out of intellectual honesty, I'm going to ask a question, a stira from our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, v'yim lav, that if the stone is not tied down to this bucket, and therefore when he draws water from the well, the stone is going to just float to the surface and it falls out of the bucket because it's not tied down. Says the Mishnah, Ein Mimalim Ba. You're not allowed to use the bucket. It means that the stone does not become part of the kli when you place it inside the bucket. Now wait a second. According to this tradition of Rav Asi, in the name of Rav Yochanan, we just established that as soon as you were deliberate about placing the stone on top of the chavis, it became part of the kli because you wanted it to serve as a coverlid. Here also in our Mishnah, he placed the Evan inside the bucket. He wants it to serve as a weight. And yet the Mishnah says, since he didn't tie it down, it's not part of the kli. In other words, it's very beautiful because we just established in the name of Rav Ami, the first tradition, that the reason and the situation in which the Mishnah allows you to move the bucket is because you tied it down. You need that profound change in order to establish that the stone is part of the kli and loses its shame muktzah and gets its shame kli. And in the case where he did not tie it down, it's not a kli. And therefore the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Beis now makes a lot of sense that if he places the stone on top of the barrel becomes a basis l'davar asur because the stone itself is muktzah because he didn't tie it down. But now if we jump over to the tradition of Rav Ami, we have a problem because Rav Ami said, in the context of the Mishnah of Evan al Pi HaChavis, that if he was deliberate about placing the Evan on top of the Chavis, even though he didn't tie it down, it becomes part of the Kli. Our Mishnah of Keruya insists that if he didn't tie the stone down to the bucket, the stone remains Muktzah. Velohi. Says Rabbi Yosef, that's not a question. Hasam, there in the case of Keruya, the stone is absolutely functionless, so to speak, without Hiduk. Kaven delo hadka, why didn't he bother tying down the stone to the barrel, to the bucket? Bitule bitola. He revealed his intention that the stone is not... it's not significant enough. You know, it's come, easy go. This stone will get detached. It'll go flying up to the top of the water. It's going to float to the top. And tomorrow, he'll use a different stone. And therefore, he never really designated it as part of the kli. But in the case of a barrel, when he takes a heavy stone and he puts it on top of the barrel, he may leave it there for a month. Who knows how long until he decides to get access to the wine. And therefore, in that case, we don't assume that, hey buddy, you should have tied down the stone to the chavis. The situation of the chavis is such that you can cover the chavis and accomplish your goal with this stone in a more or less permanent kind of way, even without hiduk. But you see very carefully that Rabbi Yosef is tiptoeing on his toes, you know, to come up with some sort of distinction here between the barrel case and the bucket case. In the bucket case in Ambition of the Keruya, there he should have indicated his serious concern and the value of this stone by tying it down to the bucket, because putting it down in water, that's surely you're gonna lose this stone. Apparently, from the absence of tying it down, lo hadka is bitule batla gila daito. He reveals his dasha ena evan chashuva bienov lishtamish, but he doesn't really want a shimush from the evan. It's only on a very very temporary basis. The bucket is going to go down, the Evan is going to get lost, and that's fine. He doesn't care about that. But, and therefore the Evan remains mukta. But in the case of Hanochas HaEvan Al Gabi Chavis, where he uses as a coverlid, we don't tie down coverlids. Apparently it's accepted that if it's a heavy enough stone that can function as a coverlid, just leave it down, place it down, Hanocha Bilvad, that itself makes it part of the Kli. It doesn't need Hiduk. Okay. B'maika miflugi. Now, Rabosei, we're up to the kishkis of the sugya. What are they arguing about? Rabbi Ami and Rav Asi have two traditions, and the issue is when and how do you establish the Evan as a Kli and your Mafkia Mukta? When do you remove Mukta? Mar Sover, according to the first opinion, that was Rav Ami, that as long as he designated it, that designation, even though he was Meniach deliberately, that's not enough. Be'inon Maisa, you need something more profound. In order to establish that this Evan is part of the Chavis, you need what we would call a Maisa. The Rishonim call it a Maisa Chashuv, a very significant act. You have to really change the physical structure of the stone. And it's not enough. Wait, just one second. No. Rabosei, again, no questions. I was just trying to get the Taich in the Gemara. The Gemara says the following, that according to Rabbi Ami, what you need is some sort of active change that establishes the Evan as a part of the Chavis. Hanocha, just placing it down, is not enough of a Maisa. It doesn't change in any way the structure of the Evan. And therefore, just like we saw in our Mishnah of Keruya, the only time that the Evan becomes a Kli is when you tie it down with Hiduk. Rabbi Ami, in his tradition, says the same thing applies to an Evan Al-Pi Achavis. Umar Sover, but Rabbi Asi, the other opinion holds, Lo Be'inon Maisa. You don't have to make a physical structural change in an Evan, in Mukta, in order to make it part of a Kli. All you need is just to simply indicate that you've placed it down. So for example, Rabosai, you remember we've been asking for the last, I don't know how many months, over and over again, I take a stone on Erev Shabbos and I put it near the door to keep it as a door stopper. Would that be enough? It would seem to me, again, this is just, again, we're just going through the Gemara Pshat, but no deep, profound insights here. Just simple, on a simple level, it would seem to me that this question of whether placing the stone as a doorstop would be enough to remove Mukta would depend upon this machlok. I'm just, again, don't quote me here, lahalach. I'm just giving you what I think is a flavor for the Gemara. Just a simple, superficial mechanism by which we can sort of, through this illustration that I'm giving, understand what's going on here in this machlokas. Rav Ami says that's not enough. You placed it down. So what? It's here today and gone tomorrow. You have not made any sort of change. You did not tie down the Evan in any profound way. Without making a shinui, some sort of maisa chashuv of tikun, you know, to establish it as part of the Kli, it remains mukta. Comes along Rav Asi and he says, no, all you need is hanacha. And once you do hanacha, you've placed it there, and it's in, you know, in a way that it can function. So it, even though it's a kind of chaplap kind of thing, and it's very temporary, nevertheless, we don't need a mice. We need just to place it down and demonstrate that you're interested in this stone serving as a Kli. Okay, now we get to the sugya. The Azdu L'Tamayu, this machlokas between Rav Ami and Rav Asi, is an old machlokas. And each one is consistent with his opinion in the context of that old machlokas. And what was the case of the old machlokas? Dechi Asa Rav Dimi. Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael. And he's going to tell us a story about Rav Yehuda Nasi. Rav Yehuda Nasi was in Eretz Yisrael. Amar Rav Chanina. Rabbi Chanina, the Amri, and others say, Rabbi Chanina was the name of Rabbi Chanina. So this whole story was transmitted by Rav Dimi when he came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, and he told this whole story about what was going on in Eretz Yisrael. Pamachas holach Rebbe l'makom echad. One time Rebbe was in a certain location on Erev Shabbos, who matz, and he found the nidbach Shalavanim. He found that they had set up these bricks, these stones, for building purposes, one on top of the other. And it's Erev Shabbos now. The Amar LaTalmidav, he turns to his students and he says to them, quote, Tzu'u v'chishvu k'dei sh'neshev aleim l'mocha. Literally translated means that he said to them, I want you to think and decide and designate these stones for as a couch, as a moshav, as a place for yeshiva. In order that, Kadesh and Eshev Aleim Lamacha, tomorrow, will be able to have access to the stones. And David asked me, are you allowed to move the stones? The answer is yes, you can move the stones. Why? Because they have now been designated as a yeshiva. V'lo etzrichon Rebbe l'maisa. Rebbe did not require on Erev Shabbos that they do anything. They didn't move the stones. The stones are piled one on top of the other. Rabbi Yochanan, according to this tradition, had a different understanding of what Rebbe actually said to his Talmidim. He did not say to his Talmidim the way you transmitted it, Tzu v'chishvu, but rather he said to them, Hitzrichon Rebbe l'maisa, you have to organize the stones in such a way, on Erev Shabbos, in such a way that they should be designated for sitting. The fact that they're piled up one on top of the other, and you thought about it, you said, you know, I want to use this as a moshav, and tomorrow on Shabbos I'll rearrange these stones, that's not enough. So again, there are two versions of exactly what Rebbe said to his Talmidim. According to the first version, Rebbe says to his Talmidim, Tzu v'chishvu. And this is very fascinating, because Tzu v'chishvu seems to imply that you don't need any change whatsoever. Even machshava would be enough. You know, we didn't get to the point where we thought that machshava would be enough. Even according to the second tradition of Rabbi Yochanan that we learned earlier, Rav Asi's tradition, hanacha, all you need was to place the Evan on top of the chavis, but you needed at least hanacha. Now we're going a step further, according to the first version of Rebbe, Tzu v'chishvu, which might mean that in the discussion that we had before about Evan al piachavis, if on Erev Shabbos he decided that this Evan is going to serve as a kavalid, he didn't even move it and place it on top of the chavis, chishvu would be enough. His second tradition is Rabbi Yochanan's tradition. And Rabbi Yochanan said they have to do a maisa. Now the question is, what maisa do they have to do? Do they have to organize the stones in such a way? That's what the Gemara is going to clarify now. My Amar Lahu. What did Rebbe tell his Talmidim, according to Rabbi Yochanan, in order to allow sitting on these stones on Shabbos? This is going to be the machlokas between Rabbi Ami and Rav Asi. Rabbi Ami Omar, Tzu v'lamdum Omar lehem. What Rabbi Yochanan meant when he said Hitzrichon Rebbe Maisa, it meant lamdum. Lamdum means that now you should organize the stones, each one in its proper place, so that it will be comfortable to sit on tomorrow. In other words, according to Rabbi Ami, it's not enough just to have the stones, but you have to do some sort of structural change in the stones and organize them in a way that they really now become a moshav. And it's not enough to just think about it. And Rav Asi Omar, and this is going to save me, this next line, because I was really perplexed, because Rav Yochanan said, Tzrichon Rebbe Maisa. What kind of Maisa? And I was thinking that is this maisa something like hanocha? In other words, it's not a very profound maisa, or is it something more profound like limdum? You know, where he had to the talmidim were required to organize the stones in such a way that they could sit on it. So this was the piece of the puzzle that I was missing. Rabbi Asi Omar Tzu v'shafshafum Omar lahu. This is something less profound than limdum. What's v'shavshefum? L'shavshef es avon, it means that there are pieces of concrete that dried on top of the stones. That's not going to make it very comfortable to sit on the stones. They jut and so forth. And therefore, according to the tradition of Rav Ami, all you have to do is just remove these pieces of concrete. That's what the Talmidim were asked to do. That itself will make the stones into a kli. And tomorrow we're allowed to organize them in such a structure which is called lamdum or sidrum, so that we can sit up. All you need is l'shafshef es avonin. This is enough of a maisa to consider it as a kli. So therefore, according to Rav Asi, all we need is the most insignificant kind of maisa that somehow demonstrates in an objective way, in a public sort of way, that he wants this Evan to be a Kli. He doesn't have to make a structural change in the Evan. He just has to imagine if you had a towel or something and the top of the stone was wet and you just want to dry it off, that would be Hachanamu Etes. That's not called a Maisa Chashuv, but it's a just like a Hanocha that we discussed before. When you place the stone on top of the Evan, that's called a Hanocha. You do not tie it down. According to Rav Asi, that's enough to make it part of the Kli. In other words, the Evan becomes part of the Kli. And here too, in the case of Tzu v'shafshafum, as long as he cleans off the top of the stones of any sort of filth and dried concrete, and he makes it comfortable, that's enough. That's called a Maisa Koldehu. That's an insignificant Maisa. And that's enough, according to Rav Asi, in his tradition of Rabbi Yochanan, to make the stone into what? Into a Kli. On the other hand, according to Rav Ami, that's not enough. Shifshifum is not sufficient. You need some sort of a structural change. We're not going to wait till tomorrow on Shabbos itself for you to be Mesader es Havon and Velimdum, but rather on Erev Shabbos you have to go ahead and Velimdum. And the Gemara now thinks that we have here a Lishitoso. What does it mean, Lishitoso? We have sort of a consistency here that when we get to the Machlokes in the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Mem Beis regarding Evan al Piachovis, where Rav Ami requires that you make some sort of a change by tying the stone down to the chavis. Other than hanochas ha'evin al gavi ha'chavis is not enough. It's not a structural change. You need to make it into a dofen, as we said, to make it into part of the chavis, and that for that you need hiduk. So too, Rabbi Ami understood in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that when Rebbe allowed his Talmidim to designate these stones for yeshiva, he required that they do some sort of a structural change that's parallel to Hiduk, and that's called Lamdu, meaning to set up the stones in a new formation so that now it can serve as a motion. Then we have the Shita of Rav Asi. Rav Asi says, no, Hanocha is sufficient. All you have to do in the case of the Evan al-Piyachov is to make it part of the Kli, is to simply place it down for the deliberate purpose of serving as a kovalin. And so too, Rav Asi, in his tradition of Rabbi Yochanan, Rebbe had told his Talmidim, Hitzrichon Rebbe Maisa, and what kind of Maisa did they need? They needed a very, shall we say, simple or minimal, we'll call it minimal, I think that's a good word, a minimalist Maisa, a Maisa Koldu, and all they had to do is Shifshum, they had to just clear it off, and then tomorrow they'll do the Sidrum, they'll set up the thing. And this is the same, this is parallel to the case of the Chavis, that as soon as you put the Evan al Piyah Chavis, that Hanoch itself is a Maisa Koldu, it's enough of a minimalist action to demonstrate publicly that the Evan is serving as part of the Chavis. Now, the only missing piece of this puzzle is the first tradition of Rebbe. This is before Rabbi Yochanan, the tradition of Rabbi Zera, in the name of Rabbi Chanina, that all Rebbe told his Talmidim was Tzu v'chishvu k'deisha neshev aleim l'mochar. This is the most extreme shita. This is what I call a third approach, that all you need is a machshava. Nothing more than a machshava. Again, it was only Rabbi Yochanan who came along and said, no, that's a faulty transmission. That's not what Rebbe said to his Talmidim. But the original transmission was that Rebbe said to his Talmidim, Tzu v'chishvu, which means the machshava alone would be enough. And that's certainly not Rabbi Yochanan's tradition. Rabbi Yochanan, whether you take Rav Ami, that you knew it a profound maisa, structural change, which means you have to do hiduk, or you have to do limdum, and Rav Asi's tradition in the name of Rav Yochanan, that all you need is a Maisa Kolduhu, but you need a Hanocha of the stone. You can't just think about it. You need to clean off the stones for sitting purposes. You can't just think about it. And now we have a different tradition which has nothing to do with Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is upset with this tradition that Rebbe went as far as to say Chishvu. As long as you thought about using the stone on Erev Shabbos for a certain purpose, it loses its status as Muktzah. That, my friends, is as far as I was able to get in the Sugya.
I just want to give you a nafkamina.
A nafkamina. Do you want to give me a case? Like a kind of case?
No, I had a case. There was a guy named Rav Dror, Professor Rav Dror Fixler from Bar Ilan, who was talking in Machon Lev. And he was talking about other issues, how it impacts halacha, that there are toys out in the market, that are based on state-of-the-art technology, that all you do is think, and it moves the cars around on the your brain waves are enough to move the objects on the playing field, right? So I'm saying like this: if you have
this was a Shabbos issue that he was discussing.
No, he was talking how it impacts other halachot around the board, all types.
Right.
You know, pigul and whatever it is. I want to know if you have some your brain waves are able to move the seats for whatever, but can't do a structural change. They moved them. Like you move the cars on the thing with your brain, you were able to move just a call to him.
Right, that would be enough, according to Rav Asi.
Right.
I'm sorry, did I get the name right? According to Rav Asi, yeah.
But not
according to Rav Ami. If we get to the point of technology where you could really move things around, then it would be good even according to Rav Ami. Okay then, Rav Asi. Now we want to open up this awesome. Yes, please.
I understand. It's beautiful the way the shittos are consistent between the two cases and such. And the only thing that's, I find difficult, I never saw something about a shimush zmani. If the shimush is only done once, it's not enough, or it's a minor, like, it seems to be a new variable in the mix. The fact that the cover wasn't attached to the barrel, but it was used once. Isn't enough that it was used once as a covering? Isn't that enough gilui das that I want to use it as a cleat?
That's what the whole sugya is about. You know, is it enough that I was megaladas that I want to use it as a kli, or do I have to actually make it into a kli?
Right. Okay.
Make it, there are disposable kalim, but they're not makabel tumah. You know, the things that are chad pami that you do on a one time basis, that's not called a kli, right? The whole greatness of a kli and the uniqueness of a kli is that it's permanent. You know, until it breaks, it's permanent.
Okay. What happens if? So one Shabbat, you have the stone on top of the barrel, and you remove it because you're following the shita that it's part of the clay, right?
Right.
I'm trying to think what I'm trying to think. And then during
you remove it, and therefore you get the barrel. You're able to take the wine out of the barrel, right?
And during the week I'm nidura, and now I come to a new Shabbat. But before Shabbat, I left it off, and now I realize in Shabbat. Shabbat has come in, and I now all of a sudden I realize that I left the cover off. I want to put it back on now. It's now the second Shabbat, right? So the fact that which ties into Ben's question, I've already used it as a cover, right? So
last Shabbat it was a kli.
It was a cover. It was the kli. Now I'm the second Shabbat, and now I want to put it back on. It wasn't on the barrel when Shabbat came in.
According to Rav Ami. If he actually tied it down last Shabbat, and that's the only way he could make the Evan part of the Kli,
right.
And then he untied it, then that's also a Gili Das, what we call in the Gemara's language, Batla Bitule. Right? What was the Bitule Batla? Why didn't you tie it back on?
Okay.
But I think your question could be very relevant to Rav Ami. According to Rav Ami, you don't need to tie it down. All you need is to place it there.
Rav Asi.
I'm sorry, Rav Asi. What did I say? I said Rav Ami. Yeah, okay. I'm going to probably make that mistake over and over again. But anyway, according to Rav Asi, could be you're right that if on one particular Shabbos I used it as an opening, you know, as a covering, but now, you know, now I'm getting wine out of the barrel, like it's Erev Shabbos, and now I'm taking wine out of the barrel for my Shabbos Kiddush, let's say. Right. So I didn't get a chance to put the cover back on. Maybe that cover is already part of the kli, or no, this is the other side in your suffix. But maybe we could say that it's only part of the kli when it's got the hanacha. The fact that last Shabbos it had the hanacha doesn't influence this Shabbos. I don't know. That's an excellent question. So let's take a look at this presentation here. He starts by quoting the Gemara, Pligi Rava B'Shem Rav Ami, for Rav Yosef B'Shem Rav Asi, B'Meiniach Evan Al Pi HaChavis, Iyakati Havi Muktzu Kechol Tzroros Ve'Avonim, Oshi Naseis Kisui LaChavis, and we added that it becomes part of the Kli. V'Omer B'Gemara, Shom B'Vaikom Mifugi, Mar Sover B'Inan Maisa, U'Mar Sover Lo B'Inan Maisa. ulahalon b'gemara amrinon v'yazdu l'tamayhu d'chi asa Rav Zera pamachas holach Rav Dimi pamachas holach Rebbe l'makom echad matzah nidbach shalvonim amlo talmidam tzu v'chishvu. And Rabbi Yochanan says it's Rechul Rabbi Lemaisa. What was that Maisa? According to Rav Ami, it was Limdum, and according to Rav Asi, it was Shifshifun. Now he tells you the Ayin Sham Barashi Dibra Maskil Tzu Vilimdum Sajruosam, set them up. In other words, if they're piled one on top of the other, you can't climb up there to sit on it, so you have to organize it in such a way that you take it down. And even if you take it down, it might be if they're very low stones, you have to put one stone on top of the other to get it a little bit higher. But at any rate, you got to get the right size. V'hishivun. And that's exactly what they do. They went ahead and they set it up in such a way that it now is a comfortable chair. That's how they organized, they structured it. K'day shlo nitztarech liga bahem limachar. Now Rashi adds a few words here that seem to give us a handle, a barometer. You know, what is this Maisa Chashuv that we spoke about according to Rav Ami? Rav Ami says it's not enough that you just clean off the top of the stones, but you have to reorganize the stones. So Rashi adds the word Shalom, it's Tarech Liga Bahem Lamachar. Very interesting. Rashi is saying that according to the standards and the demands of Rav Ami, the Maisa Choshev that you need is considered, it can be judged or it can be evaluated by the fact that you don't need to touch them. You've done everything. L'fisha Ein Hazmona B'Maisa. Now here you have a big issue here about two words, whether Rashi has these two words in the Girsa or it doesn't. And the words are Kolduhu. Okay. So Ein Hazmona B'Maisa Koldu, let's read it as some of the Achronim, the Maram, the Marshal, the Girso. Mo'eles li Evan la Sosa Kli. In other words, according to the Shita of Rabbi Ami, the first Shita, it's not sufficient to do a Maisa Koldu. You have to go beyond the Maisa Koldu. I can tell you why that Girso is a little bit uncomfortable for us, because It's not just enough that, you know, Ein Hazmona B'Maisa Koldu, but you need a real Maisa Choshu. You know, there's a lot of middle of the road, you know, between the two extremes. There's many different Madregas in between. If you take out the word Koldu, what we're saying is, according to Rav Ami, that it's not enough to do a Maisa. You need to get to the point where Lo Nitztarech Liga Bahem L'machar. It's such a Maisa Choshuv, it's way beyond Kolduhu, many Madrigas beyond Kolduhu, that you've already done a complete deal. You know, you have a very comfortable place to sit, everything's organized, just on Shabbos, just sit down and don't bother with lifting a finger. For Rav Ami, L'tame, D'yom Eliel, Ein Ha'Even, Nases, Kli, Behanocho. Rashi says that Rav Ami holds that it's not enough just to place the stone on top of the chavis and decide that it's going to serve as a cover lid, but rather you have to make a change in the oven. Okay. Now, on page Resh Nun Tes, he's going to focus on this issue of the Girsa and Rashi, as to whether or not Rashi has those extra two words, Koldu. In other words, Rashi says, Ein Hazmona B'Maisa, this is Rav Ami, and does he have an Ein Hazmona B'Maisa Koldu? Because then it would imply, as long as it's not a Koldu, you've gone one notch higher and more profound than a Koldu, that's enough to satisfy Rav Ami's change in the Evan. Ayin b'beis Yosef Simon Shin Ches. The Goras b'divrei Rashi, his Girsan Rashi, Didan, in our Rashi, is Ein Hazmona Afilu b'maisa Choshuv. Wow. Interesting. You see, I was misleading you a little bit. I told you that the whole issue in the Girsan is whether or not you have the words Koldu. Beis Yosef has a different issue. His issue is that he had a different text in Rashi, and it says the Ein Hazmona Afilu B'Maisa Choshuv. He adds two words to Rashi. In other words, the word b'maisa is sandwiched now, according to the Beis Yosef's Girsa, between two other words, afilu and chashuv. And I think the most chashuv word here is the word chashuv. In other words, even if you did a maisa chashuv, that still is not enough to transform the evan into a kli. Says Rav Soloveitchik, lefi girsa zu, lo mahani shum maisa. Even a maisa chashuv, you can do something very profound and make a structural change in the object in the stone. It still remains a stone. Is a stone. Is a stone. It's still mukta mukta mukta. And only when, at what point can we say the Evan is a Kli? When lo yitztarech liga b'en lamachar, when tomorrow he doesn't have to touch it. So it's not enough to just add something profound. There may be other steps in the way, on the way, and you have to go all through all those steps, make all those changes such that it's in a perfect, complete state. It's a kli, the eino tzarech ligamen. But a maisa chashuv, even though it's chashuv, is not sufficient, according to Rav Ami, in the girsa of the Beis Yosef and Rashi. The chein noktu amatzis ha-shekel ha-prima godin, the mishpatot zav, simon shin ches, the chein meduik l'chora b'tchilas divrei Rashi, shekosav, sidru osam v'heshivum kidei shalo nitztarech ligamen l'mochar. Even though he made this structural change and he organized it that it's appropriate for sitting as a seat, it still remains in heaven. When does the heter of kli kick in? That's only when he doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have to move a thing. Everything is ready. Everything's in place. That he doesn't have to touch them. He doesn't need to touch them or move them in order to perfect this seat. And it's b'shleimus. It's absolutely complete. Uyu kfar yeshiva miyad. You know, when he goes out there on Shabbos, he just sits down. V'chol mukta afshu aser v'tiltul hu muta b'negia. Ah, okay. So he adds another sentence here. He says the following: that when Rashi says she eino tzarech liga b'hen. Don't misunderstand Rashi. When Rashi doesn't mean ain't tzarech liga b'hen because of the problem of muktzah. So this is a different discussion, Rabosai, which is a very relevant discussion, that muktzah does not encompass negir. Muktzah means tiltal, when you move something. But when you touch something, that's not muktzah. Again, a lot of small objects, as soon as you touch them, they move. But if it's something that's very solid and very heavy, even though you touch it, it's not going to move. So, for example, we had a discussion whether an automobile on Shabbos is mukta, or maybe it's a klishan latal iser. Let's assume it's mukta. If I want to touch a car, that's not a problem. As you know, if I'm very strong, you know, and I touch a car and it starts moving, that's a problem. But if I'm not that strong, so again, that's
sitting on a car.
Sitting on a car might cause it to move, I don't know.
You depress upon
that might be considered tilt. I don't know. But again, I don't want to get off on a tangent because we're going to lose our focus here. I'm just pointing out that don't misunderstand Rashi that when he says negia, he's talking about mukta. When he's talking about einatzarach liga b'hen, he's talking about whether or not it's perfectly ready and there's no need to touch it and change it and move it, do any sort of thing to it. It's ready. That's the standard of Rav Ami. That's the demand in order to convert the muktzah into a kli. So in the next paragraph, he points out the Amafurish b'Gemara b'taymi de Rav Ami. The Gemara explains explicitly that what's Rav Ami's principle, what is his operating principle? Mar sovar b'inon masa. That according to Rav Ami, you need a masa. And the Lashon HaGemara seems to indicate that you need a masa chashuv. And that would be enough according to Rav Ami. according to Beis Yosef, the way he reads Rashi in his text of Rashi, the Gemara is a little bit misleading. It's a little bit incomplete, to say the least. It's very ambiguous. The Gemara just says you need a mice. Okay, call it a mice chashuv. But the girs of Rashi is, the way Beis Yosef has it, that what's the language of the Gemara? Ein hazmana b'maisa chashuv. Even though he made a maisa chashuv, that's not enough to make it into a kli. But the Gemara says that a maisa chashuv would be enough according to Rav Ami. The kavanas haGemara be'inun maisa haynu ke'ein maisa mavur b'mishna gabi ha'evin shebekiruya she'im memalim ba einun ofelis. In other words, when the Gemara uses the language be'inun maase in Rav Ami, the Gemara doesn't specify, it doesn't really speak it all out, but we have to understand that be'inun maase means that just like in the case of Evan Shebekiruya, which that becomes the paradigm for Rav Ami of when and how you can convert Muktzah into a Kli, take a look at the mission of Evan Shebekiruya. What did he do in that case? He tied it down. And if he tied it down in such a way that it won't fall, came under Hidka, Rashi says, Shavya Dofen, right? He made it into the Gemara says, he made it into a wall of the Kli. So in other words, what he needs is a Maisa Shinui Bechefta. He needs to change the structure of the stone by tying it down to the bucket. And that's how he's mafkia the Shem Evan, the Shem Muktzah, by making it a part of the Kli. And Rashi in the Mishnah says, Kshura Yafe, he ties it down very tightly, Lefisha Kiruye Shavya Kli, because now he makes it into part of the Kiruya. So in other words, it's not enough just to do a Maisa Chashuv. The Maisa that the Gemara has in mind here, without even spelling it out, is a reference, is an allusion to the Maisa in the case of Kiruya, where he ties the Evan down in a tight way, Rashi says, Kshuri Yafa. And Kshuri Yafa means he makes it into a dolphin. It's literally a structural change. Dolphin, it's part of the dolphin, it's part of the walls of the Kli. I will call Maisa Acher, but any other Maisa, even though it does something profound, and it's a Maisa Choshuv, Eino Mashana, but it doesn't change the Gufa Chefta Shal Evan. It's not absolutely indicative that the Evan is now serving as a Kli in a permanent way. Gamimu Maisa Choshuv, Lo Mahani Lafkia Mimena Shem Muktzah. So basically, to summarize this last paragraph and highlight the main point that we want to get out of this, is that according to Rashi's Girsa, the Beis Yosef's Girsa in Rashi, when the Gemara says, according to Rav Ami, the Inan Maisa, means a Maisa Yofa, a structural change in the object to such an extent that it's crystal clear that this object is no longer a stone, it's part and parcel of a Kli. And therefore, Rashi says, in the case of the Avonim that he wants to use for Yeshiva, what he's going to have to do on Erev Shabbos is make a change in such a way that everything is done, it's complete, it's clear, and it's a Maisa of Kshura Yafa, similar to Kshura Yafa in Kiruya, and the Evan B'Kiruya, that it's perfect, it needs nothing else. But now Rav Soloveitchik has a problem from a different sugya in Beitza. He says, Yesh l'tmoa, to a kaimel on the chol mukta, milvad iser tiltul, noeg bo gam iser hishtamshus biyadayim. Kimavuar, the Gemara Beitza, davdalet of Beitza, gabi eitzim shenoshim en adekel, dehem lo chazu lahasoka, beli bitul berov. Here's the question that he asks. Let's say on Yontif, a branch of a tree falls down, and now all he wants to do, it fell exactly in the place where he wanted it to fall, in order to make a fire. You're not allowed to make a fire. And why is this so? The Eitzim that fell from the tree are Nolad, that's Muktzah. And not only is it prohibited to move Muktzah, but it's prohibited to get any benefit from Muktzah. And in the case where he lights the fire, he doesn't actually move the tree, the branch, I should say. And you would say, therefore, it's okay. He's not violating an Isur Tiltul Muktzah. Again, it's Muktzah, but it's not Tiltul Muktzah. But no, there's another category of Muktzah, and I think we've discussed this in the past, but maybe not deeply. Namely, Shimush B'Muktzah. I'm not allowed to benefit from Muktzah. And if I'm not allowed to benefit from Muktzah, then by lighting the fire underneath this event, underneath this Eitz, I have now benefited from the Muktzah. So now let's go back to the Girsa of the Beis Yosef in Rashi. Rashi says the following: Sidru Osam Veheshivum Kideshalon Itztarech Liga Behen Lamachar Lufisha'in Hazmona Afilu B'maisa Choshuv Mo'eles Li'evin Lasosa Kli. So what's going on over here? He has to organize it in such a way that he doesn't have to add anything. We said it was perfectly complete. So let me just read one more paragraph. He says, L'chorat tzarech l'chalik d'ein isesh tamshus ele b'hanosh shal kili k'mad loka yotzis e'kenem amaleshev alem b'lechud shalol azizman ein bozeh hanoas kili elestam maisa hanoa b'alma. Okay, I see the yisod and I know where the rub is taking us, but I'm not sure how he gets there. That's what I don't get. Yesh l'tmoa Al Girsas Abeis Yosef Da'akaimel on the Chol Muktzah Milvad Isitim. Fine. So why is that a cash on the Girsa of the Beis Yosef? What did they want to do? They wanted to sit on it. Let me see if I can work this out. And Rabosa, I may need your help here. According to the Girsa of the Beis Yosef, let's say they did not complete the process and of preparing the stones for yeshiva, then it would become muktzah, right? And according to the Girsa of the Beis Yosef, he's going to have to move. He's going to have to, let's say, again, let's just try this scenario for a second. He's going to have to move the stones and organize them in such a way that they're prepared for yeshiva. So it's not enough that he, let's say, cleans them off on top. That was Rav Ami Shita. But according to Rav Ami, he needs to organize them so he doesn't have to move the stones on Shabbos. So the question is, Rashi says that the problem here is that he's going to have to move the stones, reorganize them. And Rav Ami holds, no, that's not allowed. That's not allowed because he has to reorganize them. And that would be Tiltul Mukt. But let's say they're organized in such a way that he could sit on them. That's not an issue. The only issue, according to the Girsa of the Beis Yosef, is that he has to, on Shabbos, he'll have to move them. He'll have to move them around in order to sit on them. But the Mashmos of Yosef in the Beis Yosef is that in Lu Yitzur, if he wouldn't have to move them, because again, the word Negiah here means tiltal, if you recall. That was this discussion that we had. And in order to be matir tiltul, Rashi says, we're going to need to remove the shame even and make it into a kli. So it seems from the Girsa of the Beis Yosef that the whole problem is that you're going to have to move the stones. And the sitting on the stone was not an issue. You know, if Lu Yitzur, they're in a position where you could sit on them without having to move them, because again, the word liga, you have to keep, you know, cross out the word liga, right? Litol, litaltil. So if you don't have to be metaltil the stones, then you're okay. The whole issue here, and that's why Rav Ami requires this this Maisa Choshuv that he shouldn't have to be metaltal them is because in order to sit on them he has to move the stones from one place to the other. But if Lu Yitzur he didn't have to move the stones, then sitting on the stones would not be a problem. So let's go back to the first paragraph on the page. And he says, "Ubefur dafilu sidra mamish li yeshiva lo mahani lafkia meyem shem muktzav chalatama heter hu kimavur b'divrei amar shaka mishum te'ein tzarech l'taltalam od l'mochar." So the Marsha explains that we have to, what we have to do on Erev Shabbos according to this shita is that we have to guarantee that you won't have to move it from place to place in order to set up a moshav. So he has to avoid being metaltil. You know, so your standard and your barometer for how profound of a change you made in this Evan is that you don't have to move the Evan around. And once you don't have to move the Evan around, then even if there was no din of mukta, you'd be able to sit on the Evan. Now, so you have to get to the point where you prepare it such that if there was an Isur mukta, you wouldn't have to violate the Isur mukta. That's the standard. How would I know that you made enough of a change on this Evan such that even if there were an Isur mukta, you wouldn't have to violate the Isur mukta? That's where you've got to the point on Erev Shabbos that he doesn't have to move the stones at all in order to sit on them. So again, here's the standard. You do not have to move the stones in order to sit on them. Meaning, the Isur Mukta would be moving the stones. Did everybody see that? Okay. On Shabbos, right. In other words, had he not converted, transformed the Evan into a Kli, he would have an Isur Mukta and violate the Isur Mukta, because in order to sit on the stones, he'd have to move them from place to place and organize them in such a way. So, just one second. So the premise here, Don, is that how and when would he have violated the Isur Mukta had he not done what he did and prepared it the way he did? That would be if we'd have to move the stone from place to place. That would be your gauge for violating mukta. And in the flip side, in order to set it up as a kli so that there's no mukta, you set it up in a way that you don't have to move the stones. So Rav Soloveitchik asks, I don't get it. The Isur of mukta has nothing to do with tiltal, or at least it's not limited to the Isur tiltal. So to sit on the stone would also be asur. How does Rashi tell me that if I already set it up in a way that I don't have to move the stone, then I've solved my problem? As if to say, there would be no problem to sit on the stone, the problem is only moving the stone. And Rav Soloveitchik says that that's against the Gemara Beitza. The Gemara says you're not allowed to benefit at all from mukta, even if it means turning on a fire and having the wood be the combustion or the fuel for your flame, even though you're not moving it, but you're not allowed to be mishtamish with it. So here too, Rashi is indicating that had he not done what he done, he would have to move it, and that would be a violation of the mukta. He has to guarantee that he doesn't have to move it. And the question is, even if he sits on it without moving on it, that also should be an Isur Mukta. And that's what the Rav is going to say here in the paragraph L'chorot Tzarech L'chalik, that the only time there's an Isur Hishtamshus is when, in the case in Beitza, the branches, the wood, go up in smoke. That's what he calls Hanah Shel Kili. Kili means combustion or destruction. When it's completely destroyed, that kind of Hanah is the Hanah that's Asur and Mukta. But to sit on something that's Mukta without moving it from place to place, that's not called the Hanah Shel Kilui, and therefore that's allowed. So therefore Rashi holds that if you could sit on the Mukta on Shabbos, that would not be a problem. It's only if in order to sit you'd have to move it from place to place, then you'd violate the Isur Mukta. So what you have to do on Erev Shabbos is, in order to circumvent and guarantee that you won't have to do a Maisa which would be a violation of Mukta, you have to structure it in a way that's ready for sitting without any moving around, and that's considered Shelo Yitzarech Ligo Behen, and then it becomes a Kli. Yeah.
Okay, so I think I have a two-part question. The way I think it's the Brisa starts is that they come upon the bricks, and the bricks are already set up in a way that it could be used as a...
Yeah, with bricks.
As a, excuse me?
There's a difference between bricks and stones.
Bricks, all right. So the
bricks are already prepared,
yeah,
even as they are. So you have more of an option to move bricks. You can still move bricks because they're already smoothed, and they're prepared to be built into something. But stones are mina shaman.
Yeah, but they don't make that distinction
in the Bryce. Don, which Bryce are you talking to?
The one we're talking about, where the interpretation of Rebbe.
Of Rebbe. Okay, so right? Let's see. So we had
the Kiyosa. So my question is, if you come across, you come upon the bricks, right, or the stones, and they're already set up, and you could so there's nothing to do. So if there's nothing to do, what's the act you're going to perform in order to be able to say that on Shabbat, I now have a problem of sitting on it. Yeah.
All right. So the answer is that they were set up nidbach. You see the Lashon of Braisa, nidbach, shel avonim. Anyway, it doesn't matter, but the word nidbach means they were set up one stone on top of the other, layers upon layers, that's called nidbach, in such a way that it's designated for construction. And it's not royal yeshiva. Now we want to use it for yeshiva, and so that on Shabbos, if we designate on Erev Shabbos, on Shabbos we can take these stones, from the top and put it on the bottom and rearrange them.
Okay, so my second question is, so you've done the act before Shabbat, so there's nothing to do on Shabbat, and you're able to sit on them.
Without moving them, right?
But sometime during Shabbat, maybe someone sits on it and some of the bricks fall off. Since it's now considered a kli, right? Are you able to now pick up the fallen bricks and put them back on again, or is?
So that might be depend on Chotzer versus Karolis versus Rosh Hasharav. You remember that discussion we had? I don't know if you were here. That it depends whether in that area you can use it in some way. So that if it falls apart in such a way that you can't sit on it, but what can you do with it? Yeah. Does it have another function?
Okay.
So for example, Gemara says that in a case of a Chotzer, you might have some Tzoa or some Roke or something, and you want to use it to cover the Roke. You know, it's again, you have to know in each case.
Well, in this case, I want to put it back so I can sit on it. So my function is I want to sit on the bricks, but they fell off in such a way that...
Right, and right now I can't sit on them, right. I just have to put it back together. Yeah, I would say in that case, it's l'kuli alma, even according to Rav Nachman, who requires the chotzer, and that's makom shimush, and then I would say that it is... It should be okay, right? Because what was the case over there? We had a shard of a pottery.
Right.
And we said that since he might use it for something, that right. L'chora. I mean, again, there may be distinctions here because if you have to pile one on top of the other, maybe that's a little different. I don't know.
Okay. Go ahead. Am I correct in understanding there are three girses with koldehu, without koldehu, and then the Beit Yosef says chashu?
The Beis Yosef adds two words and takes out the two words koldehu. He says afilu b'maisa chashu. We have b'maisa koldehu. I don't know if there's a third gerus. It could be.
But isn't it with koldehu, without koldehu, and then adding chashu?
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, you'd have to research that. Right now, what I have in front of me, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but you know, ein l'dayin al mashein of rov. What I have in front of me is either Maisa Koldehu or Afilu B'Maisa Chosh. Those are the two Girsos that I have. There may be a third Girs that just says B'Maisa. It doesn't have the Afilu, it doesn't have Choshuv, it doesn't have Koldehu, none of the above. You know, I thought
square brackets mean read with Koldehu.
Oh, okay, so you want to go back to the brackets. Okay, 1 second.
So
let's
Rashi,
see.
With the square brackets, Koldehu means you can read it with Koldehu or without Koldehu, which means to me two Girsos.
Okay, where is it?
The Rashi Tzu Velondom.
So I have a little vav here. You have a vav?
Yeah, the chet.
Oh, it's a chet, okay. So you look in the chet, I'll look in the vav, and hopefully it's the same. And where is it? Afilu. Oh. So what he writes here is the following. Girsa Samar Shah. Okay, Marshal, Cheni b'Maram. Okay, it's a whole long presentation. Lefisha ein hazmana afilu b'maisa choshev. That was the Beis Yosef. Mm-hmm. So that's what I have on my Hagos V'Tziyunim. You have such a thing, Hagos V'Tziyunim, that's only in the Masifta, or what?
Let's see.
Something called Hagos V'Tziyunim. Yeah, David?
One of the examples, I think, is very similar to this piece of wood that just falls out of the tree and we light on the spot, was the example of the chicken that died on Yom Tov, and whether you can feed it to a dog or not. And I can't remember the answer to that, because it seems very similar.
Yeah, in the case of an animal that died, so even Reb Shimon might agree that that's muktzah. And the reason for that is if it's a bari, if it's a healthy animal, it's not yoshev umetzap. So here also, I assume, I could be wrong, that even Reb Shimon would agree to this case of nolad, because it's not yoshev umetzap. So for example, if a chicken is meant to lay eggs, that egg, if born on Yom Tov, on Shabbos, is not nolad. It's not muktzah according to Reb Shimon. But in the case of something that falls from the tree, that's not Yoshev and Metzapa, and therefore it's like Rogus Vitzimukim, it's Mukta, even according to Rav Shimon. So there are different levels of Mukta. If the animal drops dead, now you have to ask yourself, well, what was I expecting, what was I anticipating at Erev Shabbos?
I thought you could just use the same argument you did for the tree, that you're not allowed to get any benefit from it.
If it's Mukta. I thought you were asking whether it's muktzah or not. So this egg...
No, I'm talking about the chicken that dies, not the egg.
I'm sorry, forget about the egg. I said egg, but I meant to say the body of the chicken. So,
chicken dies.
So the question is that dead body of the chicken, is that muktzah?
Right.
So if Shimon would ask you the following question, was it a healthy chicken going into Shabbos, going into Yom Tov, or was it a sick chicken? If it was a sick chicken... Then that's called Yoshev Metzap. So already Erev Yom Tov, Erev Shabbos, I designated it to feed my dog with its carcass. But if it's a healthy chicken, then I don't have any anticipation. It's like a piece of wood that falls from a tree.
Right.
And in such a case, there's no Yoshev Metzap, and that's really Noah. It's a whole new entity over here.
Right.
And that would be
and you wouldn't be able to feed it to
correct.
Your dog. But wouldn't you be able to not feed it to your dog for the same reason you can't light that piece of wood, is because it would be consumed, like as opposed to a car which you can touch.
Oh, what do you mean? You didn't actually lift. You didn't have to lift the carcass of the thing.
I guess not. Maybe you just
whistle to the dog.
Yeah.
Let's say I whistle to the dog.
You're getting benefit though, aren't you?
Excellent. Yeah, that would definitely, and that's how Noshal Kilui,
right?
Which it's even according to the Hari Kedem, that would certainly be a violation. But again, that's all assuming that the dead body is muktzah. And that depends upon whether it's a bari or a... So assuming it was a bari,
right?
Can I whistle to my dog on Yom Tov to eat this carcass?
Right.
And the answer would be no. Why? Because I'm having benefit by feeding my dog. Even though I didn't touch the carcass. You know, the dog is very clever. Smells out the carcass, you know, and eats it, laps it up.
Now the other question was, you didn't make a comment on the discussion that Don and I had. I think there's a fundamental difference between...
The reason I didn't make a comment is probably because I wasn't listening.
Okay. Now let me read you.
And wait a second. Why wasn't I listening?
Because you were thinking about...
Because I was thinking about the sugya, you know what I'm saying? So that's just the way my brain works.
That's why I'm giving you a second.
I tell you, you know, we're learning a lot from Rav Soloveitchik. In Rav Soloveitchik's class, we were 100 guys. And after about 45 minutes since the beginning of this year, or maybe an hour, the Rav was, you know, he was out of preparation. He had prepared up to those 45 minutes. At that point, he got stuck with the problem. For 15 minutes, sometimes a half hour or more, all you heard was 100 guys talking, and the Rav didn't hear a word. He was so deeply involved in his thoughts, and it would take him a half hour till he lifted up his head, sometimes put his head down on his arms, and... He doesn't hear a word.
Don't you remember when he got
doesn't hear a word.
He got up at the end of the shiur, and he realized after sitting so for 3 hours that he has terrible back pain, but he didn't realize it when he was in the middle of the shiur.
Right.
Only when he had to get up, he was in terrible
every day. Was like that. Every day. All of a sudden, you know, the shiur ended, and the man was a live wire in shiur. How old was he when we were in the shiur? About 78, probably, something like that. Live wire. I, you know, seniority, after 5 years, I finally got a front seat. I would watch, nobody can see this unless you're in the front seat, I would watch his legs move. You know, you saw his face and his arms move. I saw his legs move. The whole body. This is what the pasuk says, kol atzmosai tomar. Every muscle in his body. finishes the shiur, he looked like a man who was 1,000 years old. It was just amazing.
Put everything in.
And he had the concentration. It was beyond belief.
You didn't feel the pain.
I remember once somebody asked him a question. We used to daven mincha after shiur. Somebody asked him a question, and it was right before mincha. So I'll never forget this. I saw the Rav davening Shmon Esrei. It was like this. And about your question, I'm telling you, he had nothing on his mind but the question that this Talmud asked. Uncanny how he was totally oblivious to everything that went on. So don't take it personally. I can't last for more than a minute, but for that minute, I was
Shakua. Let's come back to this discussion.
So yeah,
I think there's a fundamental difference between bricks and stones, because a stone is an unrefined product, but a brick is already refined to be used. And therefore, the bricks can be moved around to make your chair on Shabbat, where the stone, we've got much more of a question.
David, I would say the opposite. As we say in Yiddish, if I can. The fact that it's smooth and it's designated, that works against me, not for me. That makes it more chomer. I'll tell you why.
Only because in that construction.
Correct. Because why did I smoothen it out, assuming I smoothen it out for construction purposes, then it's worse than an oven. Oven, at least, is undefined. It's unspecified. It's an anonymous, faceless object. And that makes it mukta.
So.
All I have to do, according to, let's say we take the second opinion. What was the second opinion, Rav Asi? Right, according to Rav Asi, all I have to do is, put it in a certain place, lay it down on top of a chavis, and it takes on a new... But if you ask me about stones that are used as bricks in construction, that's a whole different story. Then even, I can have a halamina that even according to Rav Ami... I'm sorry, even according to Rav Asi, I'll get it straight, even according to Rav Asi, you would need a more profound change because you have to indicate that, I'm finished with construction.
Dalton's example was that he'd already made a place to sit. Huh. And then a couple of these stones, these bricks, let's be careful of the word.
Okay.
The bricks had fallen off. There'd be no problem then putting those bricks back on because they were already designated for that kind of a job. Not to be used in construction, but used to sit on Shabbat.
As a you mean because they're sort of like appropriate in terms of the structure, it's smooth.
You made a block.
As opposed to stones that are very hard to. Right.
So I have a.
But I don't think that's what Don was talking about. Don, you weren't talking about just sitting on stones, were you? We're not going to
use it. He used bricks in examples. So I have sort of tongue in cheek example based upon this. I lived in the old city, and I moved in 1982, so it was still in under construction.
I mean, now there's no more construction.
There's still construction, but
very little
fake construction.
Just to keep everything in life is just fake.
Just to keep the.
Baruch Hashem, we're learning Torah. It's not fake.
Just to keep the company for the reconstruction of the old city alive, which should have died years ago. Anyway, let's not get into that. So what would happen is, they had the stones that they put down to do the sidewalks and everything, right? Okay. So, and they're rough, right? So what happened was, the stones were delivered, and they're all smooth on all sides. And they would have an Arab, right, or more than one Arab, who would sit in the corner with a hammer and chisel, and he would
make
them uneven so that they then could put them down so the uneven part was up. So you have a pile of these bricks.
You mean why? Because he wanted to make sure nobody would sit on them?
No. They
needed their sidewalk.
Because when it got wet, it was very slippery. So the intention they had to make it so that it was not smooth. If it was smooth, you'd be sliding all over the place.
I see.
So you come across these pile of bricks who have now been chiseled out. So they were originally smooth. Now they're chiseled out. So now what do you do? I said tongue in cheek. But
can I...
So if I understand your question, I mean, now that he chiseled them out, it's less fit for sitting. Yes. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Yeah. When the Gemara makes this comparison between Mishnah and the Braita, or there's a comparison, is that a fair comparison? It goes into this whole discussion. Because to put a rock, I understood the rock was holding down the cover of this wine barrel. You want to remove the rock so you can then lift up the cover and then get into the wine. In other words, a rock or a rock that holds open the door.
What we're talking about is that there was no coverlet. He was using the stone as a coverlet. That's what I understood.
I wanted to read a little bit. I wanted to say.
You want to say that he was afraid the coverlid might fly off.
Just to hold it down or to hold the door open. No, it's your threshold for a door stopper or a hold on top of it is very nominal. All you have to do is you don't need to do anything to the rock. It's as is. But for something else, like to make the lot sink. As a dili, you need to attach it. No, it's each different object requires a different
right, amount sure. of.
So this whole sure. question,
but Rabbi Yosef has a very interesting approach, and he says that you have to guarantee that going into Shabbos, there's nothing else that you have to do to add or to change in order to use it in that function. Okay, Rabbi Yosef, let's. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to send out an email with the new schedule for next month and.